When a former head of state such as Hosni Mubarak or Saddam Hussein goes on trial, the proceedings carry a lot of baggage. And if the trial isn't done right, history may always question its legitimacy. Arun Roth of our partner program PBS Frontline takes a look back.
Too often, trials of former tyrants degenerate into scenes like this. This is from the illegally shot cell phone video of Saddam Hussein's execution in December 2006. It's fair to describe the scene as a revenge-driven lynching. The men are shouting, Muqtada, Muqtada, because Saddam is being strung up by his blood enemies, the followers of Muqtada al-Sadr. Michael Scharf of the Case Western Reserve University School of Law was a member of the international team of experts that provided training and assistance in the Saddam Hussein trial. That execution scene was not what he envisioned when he set out to help the tribunal, and it tops a distinct list of lessons learned, advice that he'd pass on to those trying Hosni Mubarak.
Avoid the death penalty. I wouldn't televise this trial. I would make sure that the defense has all of the rights that you need for a trial to be fair, and there cannot be seen to be any influence by the government.
So far, the Mubarak trial is 2 for 2 on that list of don'ts. The death penalty is on the table in the trial, and it's already being televised.
Well, once you decide to televise the trial, that means that the defendant has a political place to make all sorts of arguments, and they're not necessarily legal ones.
The irony is the public trial can give tyrants a bully pulpit. Saddam Hussein used his perch as his own lawyer to give speeches when he was supposed to be cross-examining witnesses. He exhorts the country to unite, purify their hearts, and fight the foreign occupiers. The speech was broadcast across the entire country, and many believed it helped fuel the insurgency.
What we saw during that trial was that civil war started to simmer and exploded.
Even with all the problems of the Saddam trial, Scharf believes trying former dictators is essential for a country emerging from tyranny.
If a trial can be a vehicle where the victims feel that they have a cathartic moment, and if in the end they feel that the verdict and the judgment is credible, then this can be something that will move the country forward.
I think this claim is complete rubbish. The claim that these criminal trials of former heads of state somehow provide a healing process.
John Loughlin is the director of studies at the Institute for Democracy and Cooperation in Paris. His latest book is a history of political trials from Charles I to Saddam Hussein. Loughlin believes these sorts of trials don't provide justice and only appeal to the worst in people.
It is precisely when societies decide to let bygones be bygones that peace can be created. It's not by digging up grievances from the past and by parading them through the courts that societies will achieve peace.
Michael Scharf concedes that most of these trials have been divisive. But digging up crimes from the past doesn't always lead to national conflict.
After 4 days of fighting, armed rebels appear firmly in control now of the South Korean provincial capital of Gwangju and the area around it.
In 1980, South Korea's de facto leader, General Jun Doo-hwan, brutally suppressed an uprising in Gwangju province. Estimates of civilian casualties ranged from the hundreds to the thousands. Jun voluntarily handed over power to a democratically elected government in 1988, and it wasn't long before the country he led turned against him.
There was a government-sanctioned investigation starting in the mid-1990s.
Sun Yung Lee is an expert on the history of the Korean Peninsula at Tufts University.
There was a trial in 1996, and Jun Doo-hwan was found guilty of various crimes, insurrection, killing of civilians, and he was actually sentenced to death.
In a bizarrely poetic turn, Jun was pardoned at the behest of the incoming president, Kim Dae-jung, who had himself escaped a death sentence under General Jun for his role in the Gwangju uprising. It's not hard to find Koreans who still hate Jun, but Lee says most Koreans are okay with a pardon.
Today, South Koreans, I would say, do not revile Jun Doo-hwan. If anything, I foresee a more positive appraisal of Jun Doo-hwan in the coming years and decades for his role in growing the South Korean economy. If you eliminate his bribery and his role in the Gwangju massacre, two major offenses, of course, then his presidency really comes across as something of a success.
Jun Doo-hwan still has a loyal following, no doubt because of that success. During his tenure, the standard of living for South Koreans rose dramatically. If Hosni Mubarak had done more to raise the quality of life for the average Egyptian, today's proceedings in Cairo might not be happening at all. For Frontline in the World, I'm Arun Roth.